Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Andy Finn Show. I'm Andy Finn.
And I'm Robin.
And for the next hour, you're in Finland. And tonight, Finn Man and Robin are doing our Christmas show, although it really isn't all that Christmassy. And you know why, Robin?
Why?
Because there's a bunch of Scrooges out there that want to declare war on Christmas.
Oh, no.
Actually, they want to declare war on their ratings, and so they hawk this false idea that Christmas is under siege, when in fact people aren't spending as much. Perhaps in that way it's under siege.
We've ginned up a war on Christmas. We've ginned up a war on Christmas.
We've ginned up a war on Christmas, but it's not going well. Well, before we get to that, let's talk a little bit about
Today
in his story, because today is December 22nd. Yesterday was the first day of winter.
Ah, yes.
Did you celebrate by running around in the snow?
Well, I would have. I did celebrate, but there was no snow.
No, north of here, they got a boatload of snow, as we like to say, in the Midwest. Why they say boatload in the Midwest, I don't know, but they do. But today is the day that Lech Walesa was sworn in as Poland's first president, popularly elected president. Think about that, folks. What year would that have been?
Oh, God, I don't know. Let's see. It was in the 80s.
Late 80s. In fact, It was so late it was 1990. But the reason we put this is not to quiz you, but to quiz the folks at home. If you have the answers, give them just a moment to think about it.
Okay.
Also, it was on this date in 1961 that the first U.S. soldier died in Vietnam. We were only providing military advisors at that point, but James Davis was killed in 1961 on December 22nd in Vietnam, and people said, don't worry about it, it won't be any big deal. Kind of like how we started in Iraq. Anyway.
In 56 on this day, the first gorilla was born in captivity at the Columbus Zoo.
Would that have been a Marxist gorilla or just a regular gorilla?
A regular
gorilla. What's amazing about that fact is that you would have thought that gorillas in captivity came along a lot earlier than the 50s. What it kind of shows us is that the modern zoo, the idea that every city will have a zoo and will have one of every kind of animal, kind of like Noah,
without
the discount sales, that it's just kind of amazing that that's such a recent phenomenon. I think most people suspect that it's been going on for a long, long time, but it really hasn't. 50 years is what we're saying.
Right, I think the parents to this gorilla were brought over in 51.
And now they have foster parents.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't know that one. But let's move on to Christmas and the war on Christmas, because it's an interesting phenomenon, but every year about this time, and it's calmed down a little bit this year, there's less of it going on, but every year, preachers and conservative Christians, and particularly conservative talk show hosts, mostly led by Bill O'Reilly, make the claim that Christmas is under siege in this country. When it's the off-season, they make the more general claim that Christianity is under siege, and that somehow they're this oppressed majority. The absurdity of that, of course, is that something like 85% of the country professes to be Christian, and so the idea that that large a majority is somehow being marginalized is absurd.
And by simply being polite.
Well, what are we saying by being polite? How do you mean that, Robin?
Well, for example, remember when Walt Kelly came out with Pogo Christmas?
Vaguely. And refresh our memory.
Well, he came out with the lyrics, deck us all with Boston Charlie, Fuller Dollar, Cauliflower, and Kalamazoo. We would sing those when we'd have guests who weren't Christian.
We would?
And yes, in our family.
Good.
And it seemed somehow polite.
Right. Right. Well, the politeness thing is a corporate thing, and over the years, what has happened is corporate America tends to be inclusive.
Yeah.
So in the same way that Disney has gay-friendly policies, because something like between 7 and 10% of the country is gay, and why would you ignore that much of the market.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way, a few years ago, they started moving away from saying Merry Christmas to everyone. As mm-hmm. you know, their greeter at Walmart as you enter the doors used to say, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas. Well, every so often, a Jew would walk in. And the Jew would say, I don't celebrate Christmas. I celebrate Hanukkah. And, yeah, exactly.
Is that right?
And, you know, it's true that in the heartland, you don't really meet
right.
many Jews. Do you know mm-hmm. that I grew up Catholic. So when Kennedy ran for president, it was a shock to me at age 10 to discover that no Catholic had ever been president.
Mm-hmm.
That it was all Protestants.
That it was shocking then.
Mm-hmm. But at least they were all Christians is the common thinking, right?
Right.
But when I moved to New Jersey at age 22 and when I was out of college, I met my first Jewish people. And the concept of Hanukkah was in the news or on the radio or on TV. And I thought, gee, I've never run into this. I mean, I'd heard of it. I knew the Jews celebrated something different. But no one ever, you didn't have to do anything but say Merry Christmas in the heartland of America. I grew up in upstate New York, but the bottom line, it was all white Christians or mm-hmm. mostly
But in New Jersey, Christians. Isn't there a large population?
New Jersey and New York, there's a large Jewish yeah. population. And mm-hmm. so what happens is the companies from the 50s to 60s to 70s learned that you're better off saying season's greetings or happy mm-hmm. holidays, then you don't offend anyone.
And Republicans are so pro-business.
Yes, so you would think they would understand this, and they do. But the Bill O'Reillys of the world are pro-culture wars. They make their living. They get their ratings from the culture war and convincing people they're being marginalized and persecuted. And so he's gone out of his way each of the last 5 years or so to make the claim that Christians are being persecuted. And basically what's happened is corporations have made the decision to have their people say Happy Holidays instead of Merry Christmas. And so they've been on this campaign to bring back the greeting Merry Christmas. So let's favor the 85% that believe in Christmas and marginalize the 15% who don't or who celebrate something else, whether it's, you know, whether they're Islamic or, oh, don't get the conservatives started about Kwanzaa. They like to spend a lot of time explaining, people like G. Gordon Liddy in particular is one example, spend a lot of time explaining how Kwanzaa is a fake holiday. It's phony, right? As though Christmas isn't a phony holiday, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was a pagan ritual at the winter solstice kind of a mm-hmm. thing, right? It was a winter celebration.
There comes the red and green.
Oh, yeah, okay, that's right. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And the church decided to move the birth of Christ to the winter months so that they could celebrate it at the same time pagans celebrated this winter ritual.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea that somehow Christmas is the authentic holiday and these others are fake or something, I mean, it's just amazing how people think.
Well, we have to remember also that Christmas is the season when you buy this year's gifts with next year's money.
I like that one. Well, there's some truth to that because you put it on your credit cards if
right.
they're still giving you credit. You know, a lot of banks are not buying Christmas presents this year.
Yeah. They're not making loans.
Well, I already know what I'm getting you, Robin.
What?
Well, I can't say it on the air.
Oh, come on.
It would tell you and the whole world.
Okay, I'll put my...
Oh, yeah, she's going to cover her headphones. And I'm still not telling you, folks. I'm not falling for that. Plus, it's possible I haven't figured it out yet. But my sidekick deserves something special.
Oh, thank you, Andy.
Well, anyway, so the war on Christmas, the Bill O'Reilly's, the sum total of the war on Christmas I've seen. Now, I don't catch O'Reilly every night, but I haven't seen him
this
arguing
year's war.
Too much, except one issue. There is a law in Seattle, is it, or some town in the state of Washington, and he has criticized the governor for this, and I don't know why he's after the governor, except she's a Democrat, maybe the main reason, and she only won by 300 votes last time. But he is criticizing her, this city, and it may be Seattle, has a public square where they allow, it's considered a free speech zone of sorts, because they had a creche up and they wanted to put up a creche, which is the Christian crib and manger and the baby Jesus. And so they said, well, look, to be fair, we'll let anybody put up anything they want. And so a menorah went up, right? A Jewish menorah, and that's fine, a large menorah. And I don't know who else started putting things up. Well, O'Reilly started reporting on this, and he was finding fault with the fact that the governor caved. And I'm not sure it was even the governor's decision, although I have to admit I didn't follow O'Reilly close enough to understand if he's completely wrong in his logic or just partially wrong. But he started criticizing the fact that the governor caved and allowed these other things. You know, just go with the crash. You don't have to do all this stuff. Or close it down. I'm not quite sure what he was advocating the night I heard him. I might have come in the middle of his rant. But then, after he started railing about this and complaining about the governor, and maybe he was complaining about the mayor. I'm just not even sure. I didn't follow it that close. They got a couple of more petitions, and one of them was to put up a Festivus pole. And for those of you who are Seinfeld fans, you know that George Costanza's father, Frank Costanza, started a holiday years ago called Festivus. He was sick of Christmas. He came to fisticuffs over a doll that he was trying to buy for his granddaughter, I suppose, or not granddaughter, I don't know who, for somebody. And he realized there had to be a better way, so he started a Festivus for the rest of us. And instead of a Christmas tree, as you know, if you're a Seinfeld fan, you have a silver pole. An aluminum pole, and you have the accounting of grievances, or whatever the phrase is, where you get to complain about the people in your life, and then you have the feats of strength, where someone has to pin the head of the household, or the feats of strength go on all night. Oh. So George hated this holiday with a passion, but they put up a Festivus pole. And so when O'Reilly finds out that people are making fun of this space, he blames the powers that be in Washington and said, they're mocking you. They're mocking you. And one of the liberal blogs pointed out, no, Bill, they're mocking you. They're putting up the Festivus pole to get a rise out of O'Reilly. And I firmly believe that's probably why they did it. You know, but to the credit of everyone else, the war on Christmas rhetoric seems to have died down. And so the 85% who identify as Christians and who are not being persecuted in this country are still free to lord it over the rest of us, no pun intended. And with that, it's probably time to go to a break. And when we come back, we're going to move into the world of politics. Dick Cheney and George Bush are on a farewell tour, and they're highlighting their successes, and so they're giving some very short speeches, and when we come back, we're going to discuss them.
Hi, I'm Andy Finn. You know, even if someone handed me $1 million this morning, I'd still be doing my radio show on WEBR. Why? Because I have commitment. I have dedication. Plus, I signed a contract. Now, if you'll do the same, I'll have one more dedicated listener. Don't worry, you can void your contract if I ever get obsessed with liberals or gays, the flag, the pledge, embryonic stem cells, the UN, illegal immigrants, missing white women, or the country of France. So tune in the Andy Finn Show on WEBR, Mondays at 10 p.m. Hey, if you had $1 million, you could buy a radio station.
You could just about buy a radio station for that price, but what would you do with it? You'd have to come up with programming for 24 hours a day. We can barely do an hour. That's not really true. You and I could do 3 hours a day
like toast.
Like toast?
Like toast.
Well, that's one of the interesting things about radio is that the Rush Limbaughs of the world, they do 3 hours of radio. Well, let's say Sean Hannity does 3 hours of radio. Then he does a 1 hour of television.
3 hours of ranting.
Well, that's it. Is that they don't actually have to do all that much preparation for radio. Mm-hmm. It's actually quite simple. I know it looks very difficult to you folks at home. All we do is get out here and talk about any stupid thing that comes into our head, except those of us that prepare and are thoughtful and want to give you the best possible radio experience. So, Robin, let's lead into the Bush-Cheney farewell tour, their farewell Christmas tour.
Well, George Bush said recently that he wants to be remembered as somebody who liberated 50 million people and helped to achieve peace. Joy to the world, George Bush the war won. Do you believe it?
Let's hope it ends in peace, because it doesn't look so good. I really think we're in trouble. I'm not sure how it will end. I'm not sure how it will end.
I'm not sure how this song will ever end.
Yeah, well, here's the problem with Bush's 50 million number. He needs to round down a little because there's 2 million people in Iraq who are not homeless. They are refugees. Mm-hmm. Basically, when the Shia and Sunni cleaned out each other's neighborhoods and had their sectarian violence, did ethnic cleansing, whatever you want to call it, remember when folks, remember when 2,000 people a month were dying in Iraq? Mm. Well, the ones that didn't die knew enough to get out of their neighborhood, and so they did. And so they left. They left the neighborhoods, and they ended up in Syria and different places, and they haven't come back yet. Some of them have come back, but we got this huge refugee problem. So we're down to 48 million, and another... I don't think a million have died. Some estimates say a million have died. It's over 100,000 now. Iraqis have died since we went in there. But we're well below 48 million that George Bush has liberated. Mm. And I've never believed this is going to end well. This is kind of leads us to this debate between Cheney and
Biden.
Thank you. But what really happened? I mean, so George W. Bush is on his farewell tour, and he wants to take credit for liberating Iraqis and for planting the seeds of democracy in the Middle East. Well, the problem with that is this, is that everyone is now counting on the war being won because it's been going reasonably well. Of course, we had mission accomplished 3 months after we went in. And I'm not at all convinced, as my regular listeners know, that this war is going to end well. I've predicted since we went in that when we leave, the power vacuum created by us leaving will lead to sectarian violence, and it'll eventually lead to one man taking over. We'll be back to strongman rule, primarily because these are tribal societies we're trying to change. And the way it works is you don't just hold elections and bring them democracy. You have to gauge the level of societal development that's there and target them with rewards and structures that make sense for that level of societal development. And when people pointed this out, they didn't talk in terms of societal development. My favorite model for this is spiral dynamics. And so, well, we're at the orange level, the organizational level of spiral dynamics, so we think that everyone wants to be organized the way we are. The Iraqis and many other societies are closer to tribal level. And so the same reward structure and the same political and social structures that we would like to put in place, they just don't take in more primitive societies. And when people pointed this general principle out, they might not have used spiral dynamics as their model, but when they pointed this out to the administration, people like Condi Rice scolded people and said, you're saying that the Iraqis aren't smart enough or bright enough or developed enough for democracy. You know, that's you're dismissing them. That's a prejudice. No, it's facing reality about the level of development they're at. So I hope I'm wrong about this. But I've been predicting since we went in that no matter when we get out and no matter who gets out...
But we've got to get out.
Yeah, that's the problem when you go in.
No,
you know,
choice.
Bush was told by Colin Powell that it's the pottery barn rule.
It's the what?
It's the pottery barn rule. Mm-hmm. When you go into a country like this, you break it, you bought it. So in other words, we would own the problems in Iraq. And why the Bush administration thought they could zip in and zip out, which is what they thought... Mm-hmm. You know, if he'd come to the country and said, it's going to be a minimum of 7 years and $800 billion and 4,200 lives, we would never have approved going in. Right? They went in and said, it's going to be quick, it's going to be easy. Mm-hmm. We'll be spreading democracy around the Middle East. What could go wrong?
How long did Vietnam last?
Not as long as this. This war is now longer than... Well, I shouldn't say that. It's longer than World War II. Actually, Vietnam did... It depends what you mark as the beginning, of course. Mm-hmm. And technically, the end wasn't until 75 when we pulled out, but the wind down took a long time. So, yeah, that Vietnam was actually longer. Vietnam was at least 12 years, depending on how you measure it. So we'll see how this goes. But my own prediction about it is that what will happen is we will see when we leave, the Iraqi army, although it'll be stronger, will not be strong enough. It'll break down into sectarian violence, partisan bickering, and a strong man will eventually take over. Democracy will not take root. And the Republicans will blame Obama for mishandling it. And see, I believe this has been Bush's strategy all along, mm-hmm. is that he was encouraged by the powers that be, meaning senior Republicans as well as Democrats in the Iraq Study Group report that came out they waited until after the 2006 election to release it. And they said the only answer is to get out. And he said, no, we're going to double down, and went for the surge, which everyone is now claiming the surge worked. Well, I didn't really intend to get into all of this, but the bottom line is that, and I guess the reason it's worth getting into is in the next segment, we'll be dealing with Cheney and Biden, and so we ought to lay some groundwork here. The Iraq Study Group had only one major recommendation originally. It was to get out. And the Republicans on it, at the behest of the White House and congressional Republicans, added a little caveat which said, well, we could see where a small surge, they didn't use the word surge, but a small increase in troops temporarily as kind of cover to help us get out and to help stabilize things could work or could be workable. But ultimately, you have to get out. And Bush, so they inserted that into the study group report, and then Bush latched onto that and said, well, the Iraq study group is recommending a surge. One of the recommendations is a surge, and that's what we're going to do. So totally fake, of course, totally phony. But now, of course, everyone's claiming the surge work. And what people don't do is they don't disentangle the surge from the counterinsurgency strategy. David Petraeus is a counterinsurgency expert. And so he wrote the book on counterinsurgency. And even if we hadn't done a surge, that is a troop increase, we were at about 140,000 at the time of the surge. We'd been up to 150. They were going to surge 23,000 troops. We ended up surging over 35,000, roughly. And Petraeus, his whole thing was counterinsurgency. He didn't necessarily have to have more troops to do counterinsurgency, but it would help. So the two things are separate. You could have done counterinsurgency without adding 35,000 troops. And the principle of counterinsurgency, the Bush administration should have gone to this 2-3 years earlier, but Rumsfeld was the stumbling block. Rummy didn't quite get that he had an insurgency on his hands, so he didn't know he had to counter it. And how you do counterinsurgency, what Petraeus has taught us, is that you put American troops in neighborhoods along with Iraqi policemen, and you police locally. And that's how you beat the insurgents. And so that has worked. Whether it required the extra 35,000 soldiers or not, the, quote, surge, the switch to counterinsurgency is what has worked. And it wasn't just American troops doing that, and it wasn't the fact we had more American troops. Two other things happened. We had the Sunni awakening, which was the Sunnis woke up and said, hey, these al-Qaeda in Iraq guys, who are also Sunnis, are rabid terrorists, and they're running roughshod over us. They're telling us how to dress in our neighborhoods. They're telling our women how to behave. We didn't sign up for this. We're against the Americans. But right now, the Americans are handing candy out to our kids when they can, and these guys are beating our women in the streets to get them to behave the way they want them to. So they turned on al-Qaeda in Iraq and saw the Americans as their allies. Now, the Shia, who are in charge of the country, were quite worried about this, but the U.S. said, hey, we'll work with whoever we can work with. So the Sunni
Awakening was a huge piece of it. The other thing was Mukhta al-Sadr said, you know, I'm going to lay down my arms. I'm going to have my militia. He had like 51,000 or more people under arms. He said, I'm going to lay down our arms and go to the political process. Now, you could make the argument that it was when Bush announced the surge that Mukhta al-Sadr realized that America wasn't leaving anytime soon, so let's not take him head on in the neighborhoods. But you could also make the case that he just decided that the political process was the way to go. But regardless, the fact that he decided not to fight was a big reason that casualties went down and that the number of Iraqis dying went down. So everyone on the right likes to say, oh, the surge has worked. Why can't you face it? No, it's much more complicated than that, as life always is. But the bottom line is that what we've seen is a reduction of violence, but they're still not ready to take over. I mean, Bush continually touts the successes, but it's never enough to let us pull out. That's why the country voted for Obama, right? They wanted the countries ready to get out.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. We could use that counterinsurgency tactic in Washington, couldn't we?
On Inauguration Day, maybe?
Probably, yes. Although there are going to be fewer people.
Yes, that was in what today's paper, was it? What'd they say about that?
Oh, half as many are expected. I think because they've said it's going to be such a mess.
Yeah, I think that's what might keep people away. They originally,
it's keeping me away.
Right, right. And you live close by.
Right.
They originally said I read 2 to 4 million. Today's Washington Post actually claimed that the projections were 4 to 5 million. I never saw that anywhere, but that's what they're saying.
But now they say half.
Now they say half of that, which would be 2.5 million. Let's say it's 2 million. Even so, as the Post pointed out, if a million of those people try and get on the subway trains when it's all over, it'll take them 8 hours to get everybody home.
Mm.
And
I'm staying put. I'm staying here.
Well, the high was 30 degrees today.
23? Oh, it was.
It felt like it was colder than 30, actually, but they said it was going to go up to 30. It clearly was quite cold here today. Now, that's only going to last a couple of days. By Christmas Eve, it's going to be back in the high 40s and even the 50s, I think. So it's going to be milder again, but it was pretty bad. In any case, let's wrap up this segment. And when we come back, the thing that we will talk about is this feud that Cheney and Biden have going. Apparently, they don't like each other. It's hard to believe that a sitting vice president and the incoming vice president wouldn't make nice, since George W. Bush and Barack Obama are committed to a smooth transition. But so far, what we've seen is that Cheney and Biden are sniping at each other. And I got to tell you, I know whose side I'm on.